Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, coming to you on Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, February the 28th, right before tip-off of the Portland Trailblazers game. This is a big game for the Pistons, an opportunity at home to take on a Western Conference team, a win that would help to solidify our position in the playoffs. And that's what this time of year is all about, positioning, getting yourself ready for a playoff push. The Pistons find themselves right in the heart of a playoff battle for probably one of the final seeds in the Eastern Conference. So there's a lot of exciting basketball ahead for our team. And a lot of exciting stuff right now on DetroitBadBoys.com, the home of not just this podcast, but of great weekly, daily content that you have to check out about the team that I love and I know that you love if you're listening to this podcast. Definitely check out DetroitBadBoys.com, your daily site for all Pistons news. On today's episode, Ben and I just kind of go back and forth on a few things that we have in our heads right after the All-Star break, looking at the first few games after the All-Star break, where the Pistons stand, and just kind of getting a sense of what to expect and what we're seeing in terms of how the team is playing right now. Good episode, a quick wrap session with Ben Galker. I know you're going to love this one. Thanks as always for supporting the podcast. It's time to go to work. All right, so today we've got quite a bit to talk about. This is our first podcast coming out of the All-Star break. It was a busy All-Star break with the trade deadline right before. The Pistons have now played two games after the trade deadline, and we're getting into the final 20-ish games of the season. So we're into a pretty important part of the season with the Pistons now just a game up in the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference right now, holding on to the playoffs, but still a lot of work to do to stay there. So we've got a lot to talk about, and on to talk about the Pistons, as always, is Ben Galker. How are you, Ben?
Doing pretty good. Enjoyed the week off, to be honest, taking care of the little one, forgot about basketball for a little bit, but good to be back at it.
Yeah, definitely. And before we get to the games that the Pistons have played, let's talk a bit about the trade deadline, because it was definitely interesting. And like every trade deadline, I expected to see more in terms of just the quantity of moves that were made, but that included the Pistons staying with their current roster and not making any moves at the deadline. Were you surprised by that, and do you think that was the right move for the team?
First of all, I was not surprised by that. I don't think any of their guys are really... I mean, I guess the best way to put it is I think they're kind of at buy low time right now, right? Like, none of them are performing particularly well at the moment. Obviously, Reggie and Drummond have had their struggles, their bright spots and their struggles. Clearly, they need some talent. They need some wing play, especially off the bench, as we've talked about. But I wasn't surprised by it. And frankly, I mean, there was so little chatter about the Pistons. I mean, there was just really nothing interesting. Some vague talk about Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson being available. You know, but nothing concrete that would have been like, you know, oh yeah, that makes the team better by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm totally cool with it. I think a lot of fans are disappointed, and I understand that. It's been a disappointing season. But I don't think you want to compound the mistakes by selling low on players who I think have real value, especially as we look at the new collective bargaining agreement going to be taking effect and expected growth in the salary cap. These contracts for guys like Reggie and Tobias and Luer, and even Drummond to an extent on a max deal, are team-friendlier and team-friendlier as time goes on. So disappointed in the sense that, yeah, it would have been great to pull something off, but totally cool with it, thinking about it in terms of realistically there just wasn't a deal there to be made.
Yeah, and you're right that there wasn't a move, and the teams, at least when in terms of cap, in a pretty friendly place, right now. But there was a lot of noise, but it was all pretty vague, and it all just kind of seemed like the team was doing their due diligence and making sure. I think I saw Vince Ellis today put out, you know, they just wanted to make sure they couldn't catch anyone sleeping, which I think is a good way of looking at it. If someone was ready to make a move, if it involved Reggie or Andre, and the Pistons were getting the better end of the deal, they were willing to make that move. And I'm glad that the Pistons are in that position, but it was nice to see that we're still confident enough with our roster that we didn't make any sort of panic move, because that's one thing I was a little nervous about with the way we played before the All-Star break, is could Stan Van be in a position where maybe he panics and kind of sells low on a player, on a starter like Reggie. I know we talked to Keith on the last podcast about that. So you're probably happy that Reggie's still on the team, at least for now, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Reggie is a solid point guard. I don't know if he fits long-term because of his style of play, but he's still a capable player. And, you know, there's real questions about his health. When he's healthy, he can make a lot of teams better, including this current version of the Pistons. So I'm very glad they didn't do something crazy. And, you know, I think there was rumors about going and picking up DJ Augustine and, you know, stuff like that. I don't see how it moves the needle in any particularly good direction. So I stand pat, sit on the assets. And, you know, this summer, it could be crazy. You just never know when the salary cap goes up and expiring contracts are flying around. I mean, there's a lot that can happen. So there's no sense selling low.
Yeah, absolutely. We could find ourselves in a position at, you know, free agency where, sure, we don't have a lot of money to make a move, but we could be in a position where, like the Phoenix trade that brought in Marcus Morris, we could take advantage of a team trying to clear some cap or trying to move some salaries. You're right. There's some potential to take advantage of situations in the offseason. And that to me right now is a good enough position because we're still, at the moment, at least a playoff team. So I think it's worth talking about what the rest of the East did. Not a lot of movement in the Eastern Conference. The big move, of course, was Serge Ibaka adding to Toronto. When you first heard of that trade, what did you think it meant for the Raptors?
Well, I think that's a fantastic trade for them. He fits nicely as kind of a pick-and-pop guy who can hopefully still defend. It's hard to know what Serge has left in the tank. I don't think he's been particularly engaged the last couple of years. He hasn't been in great situations. But I still think he's a solid player. I think he still brings something to the table. And the Raptors have really been kind of on the hunt to fill the front court with the right pieces. Now, flip side of that is it kind of gets offset by the bad news about Kyle Lowry being hurt and potentially being out for the rest of the regular season. So really, I think they made a good move at the deadline, but then injuries happen and you know, they could be in some trouble because Lowry is a huge part of what they do.
Yeah, it's a big test now for Corey Joseph and maybe even Delone Wright, who should probably see a lot more minutes now with the news today that Kyle Lowry is going to miss it probably the rest of the regular season. I saw optimistically maybe he could play a bit of April leading into the playoffs, but that's kind of a blow for the Raptors. I kind of feel now like that team that's finding themselves in the 4-5, they made that move for Ibaka and we're probably thinking maybe they could try to climb up a bit and get to that one or two spot in the East. Maybe they're probably finding themselves in that 4-5 now, or do you see them falling at all now that they're missing Lowry?
I think it's very possible. I mean, Atlanta still remains a roller coaster of a team. They're currently sitting at 5 behind Toronto, 3 back in the win column. I could see Atlanta pushing Toronto for that 4 seed. I think that's absolutely possible. Past Atlanta, though, things get crazy. I mean, it's Chicago, Indiana, Detroit, Miami, Milwaukee, and who knows what the heck is going to happen. And even Charlotte, I mean, they've been really bad, but they've also been injured, and they've been able to string together win streaks. Early in the season, they put together a couple of really nice win streaks. So really, 6 through 12 is Pandora's box, and just about anything could happen. So hard for me to see Toronto dropping down below 5th. Because I think there's still a lot of talent there. Obviously, DeRozan can score the ball. And Ibaka can score a little bit, too. But, man, Lowry's a big loss for them.
Yeah, I think Lowry's a huge loss. I think it's a good opportunity for Corey Joseph, who will be playing some meaningful minutes right now. And maybe in the playoffs, when you get Lowry back, if he's at 100%, then you at least know you can go to Joseph if he's not at 100%, or in times just to, you know, sub him out and to keep him rested. So I think there's the possibility that, you know, Toronto can kind of just tread water here in that 4-5. And I think a lot of the teams toward the top of the East are thinking about doing the same. You've got Cleveland resting LeBron a bit, and you've got the Kevin Love injury. Boston standing pat again at another deadline. And Washington making a move to add a rotation player, but again, nothing that really kind of moves the needle for them. The Bogdanovich trade. I don't know if you have any big hot takes from that trade. But do you think that helps Washington going forward?
It doesn't hurt them. I mean, it's always nice to have a big guy off the bench who can shoot the ball. But, I mean, if the question is fill in the blank with the team that Bogdanovich makes a contender, I think the answer is nobody, pretty much. So, especially Washington, a team that I'm still skeptical of them. I don't know why. They've been winning for a while now, but I can't see him making a huge difference.
I really think it starts with Scotty Brooks. If you're talking about not being sure about Washington, it's that whole situation. Bradley Beal is finally healthy. Otto Porter is playing for a contract and doing a pretty good job of getting the max this year. It's an interesting team that's getting the most out of their pieces right now, and it's credit to Scotty Brooks. It's very strange. I agree with you. This was a team I thought could make the playoffs, but I saw them maybe 6-8 in the East, and now they look very confidently in the top half of the East. It's surprising even at this point of the year.
Yeah, Porter's having a breakout season. There's no way around it. He's scoring the ball halfway decent too. He's always been sort of a productive non-scorer, but 14 points a game, that's not bad for a guy who, third, fourth option, right next to Marcus Morris after Wall and Beal. And then, of course, doing all the other things he does outside of scoring as well.
Well, I think you had a nice transition there earlier about the mess between 6 and 12. And I think that's really what's interesting, not just for Pistons fans, but in watching this Eastern Conference right now, I'm pretty confident those top five will be there in the playoffs. 6-8 is when you start to lose confidence, and you see the Bulls, Pacers, and Pistons on the inside right now. On the outside, you've got the Heat, Bucks, and Hornets. Those teams all were quiet at the deadline in terms of making moves, and they all, injuries have been a concern for every team. Chemistry has been an issue for the Bulls. You've got some major questions about each of these rosters. Which of those teams do you feel most confident of those six to make the playoffs right now?
Man, so the team that I haven't liked all season that I'm starting to come around to is Indiana. Chicago to me, so they're currently sitting at 6, tied with Indiana, 6-7. Chicago to me, they could blow up at any minute. They looked like they were going to blow up when the whole Rajon Rondo Instagram thing happened. Somehow they've managed to hold it together. Jimmy Butler is a beast of a player, a legit superstar. So I lean towards Indiana maybe being the closest thing to a lock of that group. Milwaukee is scary to me because Antetokounmpo is so good, and they've been so streaky. They've been really, really good for stretches and then really, really bad for stretches. So if they go on a really, really good stretch at the right time, they could surge into the 8 spot and catch somebody sleeping or something like that. But to me, it is so hard to predict. I would love to say that I'm confident in Detroit right now, but I'm not. If Reggie Jackson were healthy, I'd feel a lot better, but he probably isn't. Somehow Miami's still around. That, to me, is as surprising as anything in the East. And then I'm not really willing to write off Charlotte yet. They've got a couple huge multi-game win streaks this year, like Milwaukee. I talked about it a few podcasts back, where they won like 6 of 7, 7 of 8, but then lose 7 in a row or something like that. So they're another team that they're running out of games, but if they go on a win streak, can put themselves right back in the conversation. So, yeah, that's a long way of saying I think Indiana has sort of won me over. And then beyond that, I just don't know what to make out of any of these teams, including our Pistons.
Yeah, it's very true. And I guess I should have added Chicago at the deadline. Is trying that rebuild on the fly that many teams have tried that doesn't always work out, flipping Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott for campaign. It's an interesting move and one that gives them a point guard that probably doesn't need the ball. He's played with Russell Westbrook, so he's gotten used to not having the ball in his hands. And now with Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Cameron Payne, it's a decent backcourt that Chicago has. But you're right, I think I'm more confident in Indiana than Chicago. Even though Chicago's enjoying a win streak right now that's really hard to make sense of. I think the two strangest streaks going right now in the NBA, you've got Chicago winning 4 straight, Miami winning 3 straight in 8 of their last 10 after that 12-game win streak they enjoyed. You're right, they're hanging around after that terrible start to the season. They're the team to me I think I have the most confidence in. And I think it starts with the head coach and what he's done with that roster. I think Eric Spoelstra's gotten the most out of one of the weaker rosters of those 6 teams, and it's working. I think that's a team that, looking at their future schedule, I think they're one that makes a move into the playoff picture. I'm not sure who they bump out, probably Chicago, but that's a team to me I have the most confidence in, and they're on the outside right now. a full game back of us. So Indiana, I still have some questions. And for me, it's looking at that team in the last five or six games, the defense again becoming an issue as it was at the beginning of the season. And if that continues, that could kind of put them in a tough position for the rest of the way if they can't get back to playing even average defense for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and 3 days from now, this conversation could look entirely different, right? Because someone could you know, lose to their next three, and the defense could fall apart, like you mentioned, in Indiana, because these teams just aren't as good as I thought they'd be. I mean, Charlotte in particular has really struggled, and, you know, they've had some injuries that have hurt them more than I think most people would expect. Zeller being out, I forget how many games, he's so important to their defense. But like you mentioned with Miami, any of these teams are capable of winning six or seven in a row, and that just throws everything, you know, it throws everything upside down. So literally anything could happen, and it should be, you know, it should be sort of fun. Hopefully for Pistons fans, you know, they can find a way to keep running this race, in spite of the fact that they've had their own struggles to deal with.
Yeah, well, let's just focus now just on the Pistons. We've seen two games now after the trade deadline. We'll start with that Charlotte Hornets game, an overtime thriller, a game that it looked like the team was dead at certain points of the third and even fourth quarter. They come storming back and win this game in overtime. What did you think of the effort of the Pistons in that game? And were there any major takeaways for the second half of the season just from that one game?
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to miss the first half of this game and a good chunk of the second half, so I only saw the good bits. To me, the thing that is going to be so interesting is the point guard saga. Who is Van Gundy going to close games with and why? Against the Hornets, Reggie only played just under 20 minutes and ish, sort of closed the game. Neither of them played particularly well, at least in terms of shooting the ball, but 16 assists for Ish Smith, excellent facilitating of the offense. And Tobias and KCP just kind of blew up. And to me, one of the interesting things we're seeing about KCP in terms of what are we thinking about when we close the season, who's going to run the point and who's going to take the big shots. And KCP has turned into a bit of a killer. He's not afraid, and he's shooting the ball well, especially in the clutch. I forget the numbers, but I saw it on Twitter either yesterday or the day before. And that's really interesting. Who's going to take the big shots? It looks like KCP, and who would have thought that a year ago? The early struggles he had shooting the ball in his career turning into just sort of an assassin on both ends of the floor. Big defensive possessions, and the coming off screen and in transition, his three-point shot is looking pretty deadly.
Yeah, and he was so clutch in that game, and really the reason we were able to turn it around. The way he's played with Ish Smith, mm-hmm. I think, could be the difference in seeing Ish in late-game situations, at least while Reggie continues to come back, because you're right. I definitely now have a concern that health is an issue, or at least conditioning right now is an issue with Reggie Jackson. And having him forced in late-game situations, we'll talk about Boston in a minute, that's one that sticks out right away, is not something that's in the team's best interest. Getting the ball in KCP's hands and giving him the opportunities, that's probably better for the team right now with the way he's playing and especially shooting the ball. In the last four or five, he's been just fantastic, you're right, on both ends of the floor, which is kind of what we expect now out of KCP.
Yeah, and I haven't dug into the numbers on this, but it strikes me just watching KCP play that he's more comfortable moving as opposed to being a standstill spot-up shooter, right? So when Ish is in the game, they run a lot more motion offense where KCP coming off screens, especially on the baseline, is a big part of the system. Whereas with Reggie, it's much more pick and roll heavy, which means guys are kind of standing around waiting for the defense to rotate. So that'll be something to watch as well. What does the offense look like when Ish is on the court versus when Reggie is on the court? And how does that impact the way KCP is able to get involved in the offense? You know, I'm pleasantly surprised by how it's developing, but I think you're right that he tends to look more comfortable with Ish on the floor. And if he does become the clutch player, that might be a pretty big deciding factor in what they choose to do at point guard.
Well, so we saw the decision that SVG made in the Charlotte game with the rotation and late game situation, going with a hot hand, playing Ish Smith and Tobias Harris more in the end of the game. A different look at the end of the Boston game. a 104-98 loss for the Pistons, a game that it just seemed we were never in, but we did make some nice runs at times, but Boston would just rip off these big runs throughout the game that made it really difficult for the Pistons to ever get that close. But we did have a chance at the end of that game, and I know Reggie got a lot of flack on basketball Twitter for some of those shots at the end of the game. Would you have just gone again with that with Ish Smith at the end of game after what we saw in Charlotte, or are you okay with playing Reggie the way we did in the Boston game?
Well, I'm okay with it in the sense that I don't think Ish was particularly good against Boston, and I think I think especially when Boston really exposed parts of both point guards. So I don't know if you noticed this, but like when Marcus Smart was in the game and Reggie got switched onto Marcus Smart, they just abused Reggie inside. Reggie just got pinned down. Marcus is a big, wide body. And then Ish, of course, you know, he might be a little bit better matchup for Isaiah Thomas, but nobody can really stop Isaiah Thomas right now. So I don't think either Pistons point guard is in a particularly good situation. And Reggie, really, he was solid except for some dumb shots. So I was fine with it because I think Reggie did outplay Ish last night. It's just that the weaknesses in his game were particularly apparent. He's not quick enough right now to stay in front of Isaiah Thomas. And then when he got switched into bigger players, he just got buried inside. And I think that was a really good bit of coaching, very deep into the scouting report, knowing that that was something they could try to expose in the Pistons defense.
And it's definitely been a problem for the team all year when it comes to those guards like Marcus Smart, and he's kind of one that just sticks out for us. So that's been a tough matchup. Avery Bradley as well. Boston's lucky to have two players like that. That can be tough matchups for Ish being a smaller player. So I can understand, like you said, going to Reggie more often in that game. Going forward now, is this something that Pistons fans should expect, that just each night we're going to see a little different use and distribution of minutes at the point guard position, or do you think Reggie, as he gets more comfortable, will just kind of settle back into his usual role?
Well, if Reggie's not healthy and if Reggie can't be as explosive as he was a year ago, then I hope this is what we see. And I think we've got, what, probably 10 or 12 games now of Van Gundy doing this, right? Willing to experiment based on who's playing well. And I prefer that. I think as inconsistent as Reggie has been, and even Ish at times too, you might as well play the guy who's playing well. While we're talking about rotations, I think the thing, even though Reggie got a lot of flack because of some of those ill-advised shots at the end of the game, what really killed the Pistons last night in crunch time was Andre Drummond, and specifically Andre Drummond's inability to stay on the floor. Boston had several, I think Vince illustrated out 5 offensive rebounds in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game. And that's because Andre Drummond wasn't on the floor for big, important chunks of that stretch because he went 1 for 11 from the free throw line. We've talked to death about it, but you know, Reggie took the flack, but Andre, a lot of that was on Andre's inability to make free throws. The Pistons, when you go with Lure and you go with Tobias, you lose a lot in terms of rebounding. And Boston, one of the worst rebounding teams in the NBA, maybe the worst rebounding team in the NBA, came up with some huge second-chance opportunities down the stretch, and that was killer.
Yeah, and the missed free throws, you're right. In a close game situation, that's when it really shows when he's struggling like that. And not just that, but it seemed last night he was really struggling defensively as well. And that's something that I've been trying to keep my eye on because I keep hearing net rating and the negative net rating he's had all season. And I don't always notice it because if I'm just watching the numbers in the box scores, you don't always see it with Andre, but last night it really showed this is someone that is unsure of his position on the defense. And when you've got a smart team like Boston and a well-coached team, they can really take advantage of having one guy out of place on defense. And KCP can only make up for so much. And it seems like Andre's becoming a bit of a weak link defensively. Is there anything the Pistons can do to kind of mask that? Or is there anything you're seeing from Andre that he needs to improve?
Well, I think really defense starts with stopping dribble penetration. And the Pistons had a very difficult time containing Isaiah Thomas. I think they did a decent job in the first half, but particularly the second half, I think they struggled defending him off the dribble. against a team like Boston with a guy as talented as Isaiah, you're just going to have breakdowns. It's just going to happen. He's going to beat you, and it's going to happen. I think what they need to do long-term, if Andre is the max franchise player that they want him to be, they're going to have to figure out how to build around him, and part of that means putting better on the on-ball defenders in the perimeter. Reggie, at his best, is not a great defender. He's passable. And Ish, I think at times can be a little bit scrappier, but he can get outsized, and that can cause the same problems in terms of rotating. Because Andre's big weakness is he gets lost in rotations. Time and again, he gets lost. He does okay when he has to be the guy who makes the cover, but if he's the second guy rotating, he gets lost and everything sort of breaks down. You know, I don't know how much of that is instinct, and I don't know how much of that can be taught. The thing I keep coming back to is that he's still 2 or 3 years away from when you'd expect him to be in his prime. So it's just too early to close the book. But those are the two things, right? So stop dribble penetration. I think that means upgrading our wing defense. And then secondly, you know, this summer he's got to watch a lot of tape, and he's going to have to see those areas where he's the second guy rotating, and when it breaks down, understanding why and what he can do differently.
Yeah, and it's something that you're right, that type of progression that we're looking for might not be something we can see even the rest of the season. It could be a few years away for Andre as he continues to get comfortable in his role on this team. So you're right, they have to build around, but also I would like to see, for me, it's not even an issue of effort as much as it just seems sometimes like he's not comfortable with what he should be doing defensively.
Yeah. I think one other thing they could do, this is something I think they could do in season, and there's been some talk about this on NBA Twitter, is use Andre more aggressively to try to trap and push the pick and roll. He's been very passive, and I think that's scheme because Baines sort of does the same thing. Whenever there's a point guard center pick and roll, the big man sags and goes way under. I think Andre has quick enough feet and hands where they might be able to use him to sort of push the point guard even further out onto the perimeter and sort of attack the pick and roll defensively as opposed to being passive. Because to me, one of Andre's strengths on defense is his ability to play the passing lanes. I mean, we've seen him strip smaller defenders. We've seen him last night, unfortunately, get the strip and then brick a dunk, auditioning for the Sprite endorsement, I guess. But I do think that's one thing they could do tangibly this season, an in-season adjustment. And my thought is, it can't get any worse, right? So you might as well try it.
That's very true, yeah. And it'll be a good test coming up. We've got Portland Trailblazers, CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. Another tough matchup of guards for the Pistons and for Andre Drummond. This week, actually, they've got Portland and then two road games at New Orleans and then on Saturday against Philadelphia. The rest of this week, what are your expectations for the team and what are you going to be looking for in those three games?
Well, first thing I'm looking for is, and I hate cliche intangibles, but effort. To me, these last two games, there were lots of opportunities for this team to quit, and they didn't. And I think we've seen that probably over the last 10 or 12 games. There's some amount of belief internally to the organization right now that they're a better team than their record, and they're not giving up on games. Portland is tough. I mean, Lillard and McCollum is a nightmare backcourt. Who does KCP guard? I assume Lillard, but, you know, McCollum is just so deadly from deep. And then this week we've got, as you mentioned, New Orleans away. Could be interesting. Could be fun. It'll be interesting to see how Van Gundy adapts to big ball. That's not really his thing most of the time. And then the Sixers, Pistons just have to win that game. They're in full-on tank mode. 2 out of 3 would be really good because I think Portland's a tough matchup, and who knows what the heck the Pelicans are. They probably don't know right now either. 2 out of 3 would be a very good thing.
Yeah, and I think it's good to catch New Orleans now because later in the season, once DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis figure out how to play together, that might be a much tougher matchup than what it will be right now. I think you're right. I'm expecting the team to be more than competitive. I think 2 of 3 should be the expectation for this week. Starting with Portland and then hopefully Philadelphia, you're right. That should be one to write in now that they've benched Embiid. We're not seeing Simmons this season. Clearly the tank is on there. And that's good news for the Pistons because you've got them two more times this season. You've got Brooklyn two more times. And that is the one thing to keep in mind with the Pistons. They have one of the easier schedules going forward. And if we can take advantage, that might be enough to keep us in the playoffs.
Yeah, I know on paper they have sort of an easy schedule, but if you look at it real close, like, so after the Philly game, they go Chicago at home, at Indiana, Cleveland at home, New York at home, at Cleveland, and then they've got several other games against other Eastern Conference playoff teams. So as we think about the chaos that is 6 through 12 in the East right now, yeah, all of those games count as a win and a loss for somebody. So things get, you know, doubly important coming down the stretch. So on paper, yeah, it's easy, but there's a lot of really important games against teams that they're battling with for playoff position.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. A week from now, probably the next time I talk to you, we could be looking at a very different looking Eastern Conference playoff picture. So this is something that we'll keep our eye on. But at the same time, you have to look ahead because there's just fewer and fewer games on the NBA schedule. So you start to get a better idea of where these teams are going to start falling pretty soon. All right, well, I will be talking to you soon, Ben, probably in about a week or so after these next three games for sure. So we'll be talking soon.
Thanks. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. See you on Twitter and on DetroitBadBoys.com.